he is using science. This is all science, math, back data that he has to hit the ball further to change the game.
That's cool.
All his clubs are the same length for whatever reason. And he starts his swing at a position that most golfers are at where they're a quarter or halfway through their swing. He starts there. It's weird.
On his drives, too?
Everything.
His drives are the stuff of legend.
It's amazing.
Just boomsticking the entire
time. Well, the reason we started is because I asked him, is it true that he went 400 yards?
And I was telling him that he says that he did, but there's no, I don't think they had, I'm certain he could do it 20 times if he wanted to and get video proof.
I just can't imagine that. I know, I bet he could, but it's just four football fields.
I can't even explain to you what it's like. There are fairways on my course.
I feel good if I get it to 150, I'm feeling like the f***ing man.
I mean, there's certain fairways I struggle to get to on my golf course.
I know, but I can hit the occasional good drive or what I feel like, ah, man, I got that flush or I got it to the back of the net at Topgolf.
Let me just try to put this in perspective. There's a hole on my course where the carry to the fairway is 200 yards, and people at my course who are good at golf struggle to get it there. He's carrying it 400 yards to the green.
My point is, like, I feel like I hit the ball well, and this guy's hitting it three times as far as that.
Yes.
Which is, like, on the two times per 18 holes, and I'm like, yeah, man, what a f***ing drive.
But it's the carry.
Yeah.
I'll hit it 200 or roll 50
Oh,
yards.
Yeah. I'm a bump and runner.
His is landing at 400.
Yeah, that's
and
a crazy
then rolling.
I mean, I can get it to 200 if you're counting the roll. Yeah, in the air, four football fields.
That's.
I still remember every single one of the times that I hit the back of the net at Topgolf, and it's like a major crowning achievement. And that's him hitting it at quarter strength.
Yeah.
Saints won yesterday, right?
Yes.
Yep, barely.
It's kind of weird. The Panthers seem like they're better without Christian McCaffrey.
And the Browns seem like they're better without Odell Beckham. How about that?
Well, that's the defense mechanism that I have up. Why don't we talk about the real superstar that's hurting his team, Christian McCaffrey?
Baker looked like a free man.
It's weird, man.
I could throw to whoever I want, not worry about him coming back to the huddle yelling at me.
I've been trying to figure out reasons as to why.
That's the reason.
Because every reason on the surface says it should work, but it doesn't. I don't know if Baker's not seeing over the line enough to take advantage of those quick slants. I don't know if he's got the happy feet and doesn't hang in the pocket long enough to take advantage of his double moves. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't work. I mean, Rashad Higgins is like the slowest receiver in the NFL.
Yep.
He's been benched by multiple coaches. He doesn't even dress. Oh, the DK Metcalf, yeah. Did you see Ryan Cortez's tweet? It was the still of DK Metcalf. It was Buda Baker that he was chasing down, right? DK Metcalf chasing him down. It was that.
Oh,
still.
My God.
Yeah. Coupled with, like, Joe Exotic running away from a tiger. Get away from me, you son of a bitch!
I'm just retweeting this going, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Oh, my God. Mike, I think DK Metcalf might have the biggest penis on the planet.
You're making that assumption just based off of his chase down.
I mean, proportionally, if it's not,
it
would
think,
be weird.
I don't think he can run that fast if it were that large. I think it would be harder. I think it would be more difficult,
right,
to run that fast. But DK Metcalf, I don't know what is being aired here or what's not being aired on where it is that we started, but we were looking at a video of DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker, who is not slow.
No, he's certainly not slow. He's very fast, actually.
And it looks like something that would terrify you if you saw it in the wild. Like if you saw something that big, that fast, somehow chasing down like a rabbit or something small.
It's a presence that you feel from many yards away.
And it's predatory. And he's usually on offense. And that's the team that lost last night because Stugatz came in here and things are moving too fast. Stugatz's good morning was, wait a minute, Arizona won that game? Also, Jeff Passan is writing that Kershaw has fixed his postseason legacy. He might actually be holding up the World Series MVP trophy if he wins. If he wins two games, they might give it to him as a sentimental vote, right?
They probably will. He probably doesn't deserve it. I think Seager is probably more deserving, maybe someone else, but he'll probably get it. You have to come out, and Billy talked about this last week, you have to come out tonight or in game six, and you have to give three out of the bullpen. That's how you get the MVP. That's what legends do.
Game six or game seven, right? Either game seven, even better.
Right. Maybe you want to save him for game seven. Perhaps the Rays win game six, and then Kershaw needs to come out and give you three solid in game seven. He does.
Baseball's going to get buried today by Football Monday, right? The World Series, game five, Kershaw getting it done, which is probably the biggest story. I suppose it could be bigger if they were playing the Yankees, Stugatz, but in terms of human interest for a baseball story, Kershaw winning game five, a 2-2 series, would be a big story most years that we've been alive, but it's going to get swallowed by Browns Bengals today, correct?
Yes. Plus, the better game was game four. That was a classic, legendary World Series game that no one will discuss today. But you're right. The NFL and college football. Damn, we barely discuss college football on Monday.
Well, where are the shows going to end up starting today? Will it be on the Falcons? Will it be on the Browns? Will it be on the Patriots? Like, where do you guys – well, very often they do the last game that was played. Very often what ends up happening is the night game – if it's as good as last night's was, they will start there. But I don't think Seattle and Arizona is going to pull in the shows today.
I think where most people will start, nationally at least, because it's America's team, is Dallas. Just, I mean, they're barely trying out there. It's an embarrassment.
Oh, but it's what?
It's an embarrassment. I mean, Dan, their defense is barely trying. I'm
Stugatz,
serious.
They're trying. They're just bad. Yeah. Stugatz.
Okay.
They're just bad. Like, you don't see football teams not trying. People get injured when they're not trying.
How bad is what's going on with Earl Thomas? Because he wants to be a Cowboy, and you know Jerry Jones is always, like, kind of flipping about off-field stuff. He very clearly help a lot of teams right now in the NFL. Must be bad what's going on with Earl Thomas.
I'm just saying, maybe you're right, maybe they're bad, all right? I was under the impression that they were talented on defense.
Stugatz, they're obviously bad.
It's the Washington football team, Dan. They were gaping holes. It didn't seem like guys really wanted to make tackles. Like, there were wide receivers wide open down the field.
Okay, I don't know how you measure that one, right? Because all my life I've heard sports writers accusing football teams of quitting and not trying, and that just is not a criticism that I'm going to file on people doing that particular thing for a living. And it's the Washington football team, but they scored, what, three touchdowns? Like, the Cowboys were playing very poorly with Andy Dalton, couldn't do anything, and then he was gone. Yep. And I don't even know who the hell that quarterback was that they put in as their third stringer.
DiNucci.
Italian name. Okay, so.
This is the first time I heard of that person.
DiNucci.
Stugatz, come on. So they weren't even trying in Washington to put up 22 points?
Dan, I'm telling you, I watched the game. I watched it for specific reasons. One of them is I had Antonio Gibson, who they made look like Gale Sayers yesterday, to be honest, with the Cowboys defense. And I have him on my fantasy team. Plus, I had the football team in a bet. So I was watching that game. It just seems like, listen, I'm with you about not questioning guys and their effort, especially in that sport. But it seems like there are such bad lapses in defense and guys so wide open that they give off this appearance that they're not trying sometimes on defense.
Stugatz, that's what bad defense is going to look like. They've been worse than that in every game they've played this year.
Right. Well, they play better opponents. No,
you're telling me that you watched them yesterday. That's their best defensive game of the season. Like, they've been allowing 30, 40 points a game.
I know. But then you also have the situation. I know Keyshawn was talking about it this morning where they give off like they don't really trust Mike McCarthy, don't feel like playing for Mike McCarthy.
Well, they've said that anonymously.
There's no unity. Andy Dalton, it was a vicious blow to his head yesterday. It was illegal. He got carted off the field, and not a single Cowboy rushed to his defense. Like, it just doesn't seem like there's any unity with that team, you know?
I remember this DiNucci guy. I want to bet straight up with Colgate against James Madison. He threw like five picks that game. This guy's terrible.
They might trade for Fitzpatrick, no? They
That's
have to
a
do something.
Fit. That's a good
yeah.
fit.
Yeah.
Guillermo, put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Did you know that Chad Henne was a Chief? Because that's something that I learned that yesterday. Yes.
No way.
Yeah, Chad Henne.
He ran for a touchdown.
He's their backup quarterback.
He's a snap away.
Stugatz thinks that I'm joking. No. His eyes are wide like I'm making that up.
He ran an RPO in the goal line and scored a rushing touchdown, a designed run for Chad Henne.
He'd be great in that offense. I mean, who wouldn't be? Honestly. They had some wide receiver who came out in the fourth quarter yesterday. I've never seen him. I've never heard of him. And he looks like he'd be the best wide receiver on every other football team. I don't know if it's the uniforms or the guys they're drafting, but they have receivers that come out of nowhere. It's crazy.
I don't know who their third quarterback is, but last year, like for Super Bowl media night, we were walking around and it was Chad Henne and Matt Moore. And they were just walking around, like waiting to be interviewed. And everyone obviously was looking for Patrick Mahomes. And it was like, what are these two guys doing here?
Did you know they were on the team? You knew they were on the team, right? You weren't looking at them like, did Chad Henne and Matt Moore just show up for Chiefs media availability?
No, because Roman Reigns was also walking around as part of the media. So I was like, maybe they're doing media for someone. I don't know what's going on here.
Those are the only two quarterbacks on the team, by the way.
Yeah, they also have Jordan Te'amu, who is a St. Louis Battlehawk, but I believe he has COVID.
Are you guys thinking that Justin Herbert is better than Burrow?
This is a great class. We'll see where Tua lines up. You know, I'm a little worried watching the other guys because every quarterback class, there seems to be one bust. And so far, I haven't identified the one. I'm worried it might be Tua just because of math.
Totally. Chris, you have to be worried because you know Herbert's good. You know Burrow's good. In fact, dare I say, both are great. And give me the last quarterback draft that had three great quarterbacks. Not even the 84 with Marino and Elway. They had two, and that was it. There wasn't a third one, was there?
But wait a minute. I don't see what I'm not seeing from Burrow is Marino Elway. Like, is that what you're seeing? Like, Burrow looks, he looks good, but he's 25 years old. Like,
I mean, he's really good, man.
Okay, but Mike, you watched that game yesterday, Browns and Bengals.
Such a bad defense. The Bengals didn't punt. The Browns had to win that game without forcing a single Bengals punt.
AC Green is spent, huh? He doesn't look like himself.
Yeah, he's coming on a little bit more lately. Burrow goes underneath a little bit. I mean, he certainly, I'll tell you this about Joe Burrow. He knows how to exploit the Browns' defense. He's good against the Browns, and I know he's had moments against other teams, but much like Baker Mayfield is like a 111 quarterback rating against the Bengals and like 80s against everyone else, Joe Burrow seems to absolutely know what we're doing on defense.
It's early on a Monday. It's AJ Green, AC Green plays. Power forward for the Lakers.
Thank you. I appreciate that. $2. Herbert, to me, looks better than Burrow. Throws the ball downfield. Probably has better skill guys. I see that Giovanni Bernard is still running around for the Bengals back there. Did he go to North Carolina or NC State?
No, he went to North Carolina. I remember all those Tar Heel teams that would just tear us apart.
Was Hakeem Nicks on one of those or he was NC State?
No, Hakeem Nicks caught the big pass against Robert Marv's Miami Hurricanes teams. That was one of the early seasons at what is now Hard Rock Stadium. Yeah, Hakeem Nicks also tore us apart. You remember like the generations.
But
of
he
Tar
was
Heels.
NC State, correct?
No,
he
was also Tar Heels. Carolina.
Yeah, and so was Gio Bernard.
So
yeah.
Who was
local
the
guy, Gio Bernard?
Who was the professional receiver who played with Glennon at NC State? Did they not have a pro receiver there? Like I was thinking about this when NC State. I can't remember the last time NC State was any good. Can you guys remember when NC State was like
didn't
legitimately
they give,
good?
They gave Clemson a run for their money. I think in 2017 we were talking ourselves into NC State. They had a late season ranking. NC State was pretty good, and quite honestly, they got undone by a quarterback injury this year too. I think Miami caught a break with that quarterback being injured, and they got blown out by North Carolina recently.
How did Miami look to you against Virginia?
Terrible. I went to the game. And
so bad, Mike.
I went to the game.
Were people shaming you for going to the game?
I mean, yeah, but while announcing it here, let me say something like right off the bat. That is so safe. It is crazy
safe. You weren't
safe.
Near anybody, right?
No, I wasn't near anybody. The mask mandate. The University of Miami made the decision that at their games there's no alcohol, so you don't even have people at their seats without their masks because they're drinking. At Hard Rock Stadium, I think after week two, they allowed alcohol sales. But it makes for a terrible experience. Ooh.
It was sad, right?
Yeah, I have tickets to the Georgia Tech. I'm not going. I'll be watching that one on TV. Maybe I come back for the North Carolina game if it's a massive game. Part of the problem, too, because I actually heard the atmosphere there was pretty good for the FSU game, but you're just thrashing your hated rival. So I imagine it's fun. That was a really bad game to watch. It was super boring. It was just miserable. And then I got poured on afterwards. It's super safe. Go if you just want a good family-friendly. If you don't need booze to spice up a boring football game, God bless you. Go out there. It is the safest thing I can imagine in terms of, like, outside of staying at home, obviously. That's a safer option. But if you're going to go, feel confident in their safety protocols. But it is boring.
You're already at the place, though, where you are not here for ugly conference wins. You're already in a place where your expectations are such that it's not satisfying to you to merely beat any of the ACC teams that aren't Clemson?
Well, Dan, I'd much rather win these games. They dropped in the rankings, and deservedly so. I thought that was a bad...
What do the rankings mean, though? I saw Virginia Tech was ranked in the top 20.
I don't know what they mean this year.
The rankings. Yeah, I mean, I saw... How about this?
Marshall's in there.
I got one for you. If you were shocked, Sugat, if you were shocked to learn that Chad Henne is still in the league, here's one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Over the weekend, Army accepted an Independence Bowl bid.
What are you talking about?
They're locked in.
Wait, they're still an Independence Bowl, and they're locked into it already?
They're locked in already.
Yeah. That's the earliest bowl?
What is Army? Are they like 3-1? Are they 4-1?
I mean, number one in the BCS always, but I'm not certain where they... I think they're 4-1.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, the Hurricanes got shut out in the Independence Bowl last year. Look, Mike Harley, the receivers, an encouraging story there. We were challenging the receivers. Manny Diaz said, no one's locked into the top of the depth chart. You got receivers staying late after practice and all this talk because there's all sorts of haters, myself included, saying this is the worst crop of receivers. Mike Harley has his best game, I think, as a Miami Hurricane. Now he has up to two memorable games for the Miami Hurricanes. Pope made some nice plays. Derek King, I thought, played well, but they didn't put up a lot of points, and they have to win ugly. And quite frankly, that's a game that I feel like they lose. However, that is a very bizarre Virginia team. I saw a 98, a 99, a number 5, and last week I saw a number 36 take snaps at quarterback. It's a very bizarre watch, but, you know, I'd rather win them than lose them.
Do I have to continue to look up this Mike Lennon wide receiver at NC State?
No,
I've been doing it for 10 minutes.
No,
and Torrey Holt played there. Yeah. It was well before Mike Lennon.
Yeah, so Mike Lennon didn't have any professional receivers.
No.
In my head,
it may have. I don't know.
Yeah, in my head, I had Glennon throwing the ball to Hakeem Nicks. So when you guys said he didn't go to NC State, because I had Hakeem Nicks in a red and white uniform running around beating the Hurricanes.
No, I remember him in like that infield dirt of pro players stadium tearing us apart with him and Tate. Good wide receivers Butch Davis recruited there.
Stugat, it is such a pleasure to watch that menace Miles Garrett play for the Browns.
He's great.
But it's just when it's an edge rusher in a league, Stugat, where all these quarterbacks are getting the ball out so damn fast because, you know, we've talked before about they basically neutered the value of Jadeveon Clowney, who gets to the quarterback faster on average, like, than all but four players in the league because they're getting rid of the ball so quick. And here's Myles Garrett, and he's looking for strip sacks. He's looking for the football, Stugat. That's that Lawrence Taylor shit.
Yeah.
Where he's not merely content to get to your quarterback. He's not scared of hitting him too hard like a lot of these guys are.
He wants the ball back.
Because there were so many bogus calls yesterday, Stugat. It's got to be infuriating. It really does. Even if you're safety first, it's got to be infuriating to see that you simply can't hit the quarterback hard anymore. Like, that's the rule now. It's not just that you can't hit him high, you can't hit him low, you can't hit him with your helmet. It's you can't hit him hard. You're not allowed. The rule should simply be you're not allowed, no matter where he is, because Stafford got a call yesterday where I was like, what is that? And you just can't hit. It must be maddening to be a defensive player. It's so damn hard to get back there quickly, and you get back there quickly, and now you've got to slow down because the rule in that sport is don't hit our quarterbacks too hard. And Stugat, that's not safety. That's protecting the money. That's actually not protecting the players' bodies or heads or anything else. That's protecting your league. You're changing the rules so that one player is playing a different game, less violent, less dangerous than all the others who are out there.
Made worse that the quarterbacks know the rule is there, know they're being protected, and at times, even when the defensive player is trying to hold up, the quarterback will try and sell it. It's making it so difficult on defensive ends, but he's great. I mean, he's unbelievable.
And remember how much he was getting penalized last year for like all those personal fouls, late hits. He was considered a very dirty player. And then obviously the helmet swinging didn't help that perception. But this year he's totally cleaned it up. The NFL is designed for close games and for offenses to put up big points.
How many sacks does he have?
He's on pace for 20. He's on pace for 20. So he's doing this thing. Look, the Bengals didn't punt, but the Browns defense forced enough turnovers, made enough game-changing plays. So he's just going out. They're going to sell out to try to just get the ball back, and that's probably what they should do because that is a bad back seven that Cleveland has.
That was such a fun game to watch yesterday. I want to give you a few things. This was courtesy of Trey Wingo about Joe Burrow, just quickly. Through seven career games, his ranks, most attempts all time, 293, most completions all time, 195, passing yards, 2023, third most, 300-yard games, five, tied with Mahomes for all time.
I mean, Herbert is the first other than Mahomes that has 250-plus yards in his first five games. Like, it's him and Mahomes. And yesterday was the shakiest game, and they put up close to 40 points in the game.
Speaking of personal fouls, I this is probably a name that certainly Sue Gatz doesn't know. Dan, Amari Carter. Are you familiar with this guy?
No.
Number five for the University of Miami, secondary, safety. He's got four targeting penalties. On the very first play, he got thrown out of the game against Virginia. He's missed, if he's not missing an entire game, he's missing a half because it carries over from the previous game. He can't stay on the field. It's a remarkable thing. This is the book on him. And I can't tell you how many Hurricanes podcasts I hear that tell me how brilliant the kid is. That he's got one of these beautiful football minds. But every time he comes on the field...
Is it really four?
He's got four in his career. That's hard to do considering you get suspended, right? So it's not like he has enough games to even get four. It's amazing. Every game, he just goes out there, runs on the field for a play. Our safety situation's a mess because some other player is suspended, and he just goes back onto the sideline and sits next to Ed Reed for like the entire game.
Stu Gatz has been wanting to talk about the Blades brothers because when I think of safeties, I think of I go back a ways with great safeties at the University of Miami. Stu Gatz has been wanting to talk about the Blades brothers for 2 months.
The only reason, Mike, I wanted to do this is I was thinking of local athletes, like who you could pair together to create and form what would be a good sounding company. If the Blades brothers had a landscaping company, they'd be at my house twice a week working on the lawn. And that's all I have on the Blades brothers. I mean, that's it.
That's why you've been wanting to talk about the Blades brothers for 2 months. Stu Gatz wants to talk about anything except do you guys want to hear, this is from Rich Simini. Do you guys want to hear or guess how many yards the Jets had in the second half yesterday? Oh, you guys want to take a guess? Anybody want to take a guess?
114.
Four!
What? I didn't think they had that in them, man. It was a big loss. They saw that Houston was losing. Like, oh, shit.
So it wasn't Jericho Cotchery, right?
The receiver. Jericho Cotchery played after so Glennon.
No. He played before. It wasn't Brandon Tate or Akeem Nicks.
Yeah, no, just I must confused. Have gotten it wrong. I'm going across regions. Again, I had Mike Glennon throwing the ball to a North Carolina player in a different stadium, Hakeem Nicks. So I had Mike Glennon dropping back to pass in the Wolfpack Stadium and then coming down in a blue uniform in a totally different uniform with a little out route. It was about 15 yards. It was Hakeem Nicks, who I had in a red and white uniform, but evidently, you know, we started the route in a red and white uniform, and by the end, it was powder blue.
NC State has a pretty terrible legacy at that position from my research.
I just can't believe it. You know, 7:45 in the morning, I'm going down a rabbit hole looking up Mike Glennon receivers at NC State.
Although it's been a minute since I've thought about Jericho Cotchery, so for that, I thank you.
When is the last time you guys remember NC State? I don't remember in 2017. He said Mike said
they had Bradley Chubb. When they had a fierce defense and they had a good for NC State a really good team. Prior to that, Glennon. Prior to that, Russell Wilson.
What do you imagine is their highest ranking?
NC State?
NC State is.
I can't believe I'm
NC State is the only one.
It's a bizarre local hour. Maybe when they had Phillip Rivers and were upsetting the likes of Florida State. They lost to Miami in the Micron PC Bowl. And that's when I kind of felt like Miami was back.
You can just do final rankings. I think it'll be an easier way to find.
Do you remember that Micron PC Bowl, Dan, with Scott Covington at quarterback? It was Edgerrin James versus Torrey Holt.
It's a rare school where I have to specify football because basketball keeps coming up.
Those were such tough years, the Covington-Clement years. So tough.
Yeah, but that was a turning point in the program's history. They stacked the success of beating UCLA with the Micron PC Bowl victory.
Billy, have you seen people, or during the pandemic, is he in hiding, or are the Hurricanes not good enough? Or have you heard anything from people in terms of whether or not he intends to make any appearances to yell at me this year?
Last I heard from him, he was afraid of his HOA, but he hasn't. I mean, he doesn't reach out to me personally, Dan.
Okay.
We're not exactly similar in, like, you know, our likes and dislikes, friends, stuff like that.
I wonder if
it's more of like a professional, like colleagues kind of.
Yeah. I wonder if you've heard from him about like how the Hurricanes games are. The tailgating is you drink in your own car. They don't even let you outside. West 32 is a thing of the past. It's you can't even take down your mask, so you can't make a bunch of noise. I haven't seen any pots and pans. You're not allowed to bring that in.
What's the point of going to these games?
If there's no
it
alcohol,
it seems like it's not super fun.
If there's no alcohol, look, God bless the University of Miami for being super safe. It's just not fun.
Well, let me ask you guys this question. If I put stakes on it, does it change anything? For example, I was thinking of this when I was watching in the crowd of the World Series games. I'm like, man, I wonder if those are tough tickets. Everyone is so spaced out, and the Dodger fans seemed really excited to see possibly, you know, they're on the cusp of the first championship in three decades. And I wondered to myself, would that be a fun thing to be doing in today's environment if you're a fan of one of the teams and there are stakes?
The World Series is a tough ticket. I know this because I was helping a Levitard friend try to secure World Series tickets, and there was all sorts of rigidities and strict protocols and caps on tickets.
But it's okay, so is it a tough ticket just because they're super heavy in terms of how it is that you can get in the bubble?
Everything is super limited.
Is there also a lot of demand?
There's a lot of demand because, look, this is the Dodgers. Them winning a World Series finally after getting so close is a major story. And you have a lot of influential people in Los Angeles that are trying to get these tickets, too. It's a hard ticket to get. There's a big demand and a limited quantity.
The scalpers are picking them up and selling them in the resale market for a lot of money. 2002, NC State under Chuck Amato had 11 wins. They were ranked 12th in the AP poll, I believe 11th. In the coaches poll before that, 1974, before Lou Holtz was the coach.
Wow.
And yeah.
God
wow.
bless you for saying Chuck Amato.
Thank you.
Thank you. People, look at me in my eyes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can't look Chuck Amato in the eyes because he was always wearing ridiculous sunglasses. Go ahead and feel free to Google that if you're not familiar with the Chuck Amato years at NC State. We had a great deal of fun. He looked like a cartoon rooster wearing ridiculous sunglasses.
White brim sunglasses.
So the highest they've ever been ranked, just to be clear, was under Lou Holtz, though. In 74, they were 11th in the AP, 9th in the coaches' poll.
So never been in the top 10.
Well, 9th in the coaches' poll.
Okay.
Under Lou Holtz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebitard.
Is that
show.
Where their end of season ranking, they never got in the top 10 and put a scare in people with Phillip Rivers?
No.
Put it on the poll. Did you know that Lou Holtz was coaching at NC State in 1974?
Wow, this Chuck Amato. I mean, he's just like a cooler version of Dana Holgorsen.
He is.
Put that on the poll, Guillermo. Is it a compliment to call somebody the cooler version of Dana Holgorsen? Dana Holgorsen, of course, the guy that your dad once beat up at a shake and steak.
Steak and shake.
Yeah.
Damn it.
$5.
$5. to keep on the theme of just random topics in this local hour, you guys mentioned Giovanni Bernard earlier. It made me think of Joe Mixon. The Bengals have had the same two running backs since I've been in since I was in high school.
I think it's Mixon's third season.
I can't believe you already. No, I heard Mixon called a veteran the other day, and my reaction was the same as that. Wait a minute, he just got into the league from Oklahoma like 4 years ago. Why does he get to be a veteran already?
He's already in the holdout phase of his career.
He's only in his third season?
It feels like that.
I feel like Mixon's been around for like 10 seasons.
No. Chris, Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap are still Bengals. And Carlos Dunlap, I think he's since deleted the tweet, but it was laugh out loud funny. 45 minutes after the game, Carlos Dunlap tweets this out after losing to the Browns for the second time, a team that he's not used to losing to. Carlos Dunlap, veteran, good player. 6,000 square foot city view with a huge balcony, 4-bedroom, 4.5 bathroom in one of the best school districts for sale. Do your market analysis and make me an offer. Serious inquiries only with proof of funds. Owner is willing to sell furnished or unfurnished.
Stugatz, Mixon has to have been in the league more than 3 years.
He just started his fourth season. This is his fourth season.
But how long has Bernard been in the league?
Forever.
Since Lou Holtz was the head coach at NC State.
Well, because I'm making fun of NC State for being a speed bump, but I was last year getting in trouble because I kept saying that Michigan State was a speed bump. Did you see what happened to them this weekend?
Yeah.
Rutgers.
Yeah. Greg Schiano. They had seven turnovers.
Yeah, man. You could tell that there was going to be a couple of like money line big dogs that were going to win because the first week the Big Ten had an even shorter training camp than most teams. So I was wondering who was going to be the one that fell. And that play that Indiana quarterback, Phoenix.
So great.
To be able to do it, he's a lefty quarterback. To be able to switch mid-run to your offhand and get to the pylon is one of the more dramatic final photos of a game you'll ever see.
Bernard's been in the league since 2013 after playing at UNC with Mike Glennon.
Let's go ahead. No, yeah, I don't know which joke you're making there, whether you're putting Glennon in a North Carolina uniform. I don't even know which joke you're making.
That's what I was doing.
I'd like to go down this path, though, of sort of talking about the end of that game for those of you who don't know, because it does merit attention, even though on Football Mondays, like Stugatz said, college football tends to get swallowed. So it's a great game throughout Indiana and Penn State. Penn State is trailing most of the game, then goes up 28-20, then Indiana ties it, then Penn State goes up 35-28, and very late in the game, Indiana comes down the field and scores a touchdown to bring them within one, and they decide, and I love when teams do this, okay? They're the underdog in the game. They're playing at home, such that it is, you know, not very many fans allowed in, and one play for the game. And the play they call, the quarterback didn't look like he was going to get there. He was scrambling around, and then he decides to try and make it to the left pylon. I love that pylon cam, incidentally.
It's the best.
Like, the pylon cams are so good at letting you see everything that's happening out there. But let me try to explain this, because it didn't look like he was going to make it, and he stretched the full length of his body in a way to try and hit the pylon with the tip of the football, as Mike said, with his offhand, and he got there. But the thing that I was thinking about, because they had to play it and slow it down, and it still wasn't clear, I would not have been surprised if they had decided that ball touched out of bounds before it touched the pylon and therefore is out of bounds. I just don't think you can do that in that moment when it's that close.
Game of inches, then.
That's correct.
I mean, I think the I think what happened there, first off,
I thought of you, by the way, when it happened. I thought, this asshole's going to come in here and just say game of inches and then just look at me with jazz hands.
Like, right.
I legitimately thought.
I had more for you, luckily.
I legitimately thought to myself, as it happened, you came in and you crept into my Saturday, because I'm like, all Stugatz is going to have for me here when I explain what this play is game of inches.
Glad I didn't disappoint.
It wasn't, though. The reason that it's wrong is because it was game of an inch.
Right.
Like, this wasn't even plural. This was not inches.
But those depend on the on-field call, because it's hard to reverse that. It's so close that it's hard to reverse. But so if they call it a touchdown, it's probably going to stay a touchdown. If they say no touchdown, it's going to be hard to reverse it to a touchdown. Right.
One of those in real time, it didn't look as close as it did when you started slowing it down. But when you slow it down, you realize, man, I can't even slide the Sunday edition of the newspaper underneath this guy's body. Well, it was incredibly athletic.
The thing that was cool about it, Mike is right, it's a great sports photograph. The thing that is cool about it is you see the entire length of his body. It is a long body. You see that it is fully stretched out. You see that it is parallel to the ground. And you're wondering to yourself, how is no body part touching yet? And how is he not out of bounds?
Crazy.
Like, how is he not, how is he going to get there? And he ends up getting there, but I actually don't think he did. I thought that it was an inch short.
I thought the ball
hit out of bounds first, but I'm also watching and I'm like, don't take that away from him. Do not take that away from him.
When you're Indiana, you're allowed to be an inch short when you're playing football against Penn State.
That's a great take.
Yes, thank you.
Great take. I mean, you should be afforded the inch.
Right. They don't have what Penn State has. They don't have the facilities, the recruits, the scholarship, the money. They don't have... So you know what they get? They get an inch.
Really? You factor all of that in. Is that right? Okay.
I love this. I love if you're playing different conferences and one conference is better than the other, they have a larger field that they need to score on. So if it's like a Conference USA or a Sun Belt against like the SEC, it's like 150-yard field versus 100-yard field.
Like the ladies' tees? Like the ladies' tees.
That's a great idea.
You want those teams playing from the Reds?
I mean, I feel like it'll kind of like even out the competitive balance, right? And then you'll have a situation where Nick Saban's like, do I really want to get another 5-star recruit and have to play an extra 2 yards against Auburn this year? I don't know.
Didn't that Penn State game have a similar situation to Todd Gurley? Did they have a running back that could have taken a knee on the one, kicked the field goal, the game's over? That drive never happened.
I'm sorry. They did have that. I was in my car. Pounding seltzers waiting to go into. I was actually riding a nice buzz too, and that was a buzz kill.
What seltzers were you pounding? Hold on a second. Let's hear the maximum sad Mike Ryan tailgate experience. Is there anyone in your car with you? First of all, you're driving to the game with how much in your rearview mirror in terms of people criticizing you for being someone who goes to a game?
Oh, a bunch of people with a bunch of fans of the show, and I get it. Just keep in mind that there is no show if I don't actually leave the house. But yeah, I had like my wife and my brother-in-law in my...
That's pretty self-important.
In my Jeep.
A little bit.
I mean, come on. I had my wife and my brother-in-law in my Jeep, and you know, we brought the cooler full of leftover seltzers from Assorted Weekend. So I had the Smirnoff Red, White, and Blue. I like that. High recommendation there. The White Claw, it was first to market, right? So it's held in high regard as an industry standard. For me, too artificial tasting. I prefer the Funky Buddha. I certainly prefer the Smirnoff. The Vizzies, because they have one of these Michelob Ultra-like marketing campaigns where you actually feel that, oh, this is good for my body. This is essentially vitamins. So I like the Vizzies as well.
Was it sad?
Yes.
No, but I know you said the game was sad.
Yes.
Yes, the tailgate.
Everything.
Was it raining?
It was raining. Everything about it was sad.
So you're in a parking lot. There aren't that many cars there. You're gonna have to run through the rain to get in.
It's a ghost town. I got out of that stadium in 10 seconds.
Wow.
There was no traffic. And this is, they're doing it right. It's just not, I wanted to see if I could have a good time. And go into it. I got a babysitter, and you know when you have a 1-year-old, you're gonna take the babysitter whenever you can get it. I don't care. I'll walk around my house, but I'll take the babysitter. I wanted to see if it was possible for me to have a good experience, even though it's diluted. And it was so diluted that I realized I don't think I want to do this, certainly for Georgia Tech. And heard through the concourse from other people, just you could tell groups like, you take the Georgia Tech game. People were fighting to not go to the Georgia Tech game.
Could you sit wherever you wanted?
No, not at all.
Designated seating, right?
My season tickets were moved from the section they were before because that was blocked off due to COVID. My entire section had 8 people in it. An entire section. Rows typically have like 12 people per row in this part of the stadium. My entire section had 8 people in it.
It's so weird because my friend has gone to a couple of Dolphin games and thoroughly enjoyable. Now, he's not looking at the tailgate.
Well, they sell booze there.
And he's not looking at the tailgate. So he says he goes there. He doesn't have anyone near him in his section.
It must feel nice to have some room in a stadium if it's not incredibly steamy and you're denied alcohol.
I'm sure there was a good atmosphere. I heard from people. The reason why I wanted to go is I heard from people how fun the FSU game was. They're capped at 13,000 seats. For this game, 9,000 people went. So the book's already out on like how not fun these are. There isn't a crazy demand. I have heard that for the Tua game, there's a crazy demand. They're certainly going to meet the 13,000. People are trying to get into that building. It's a different atmosphere. But when the announcer goes, that's another Miami Hurricanes first down, and I could hear my own echo reverberate off the other part of the stadium, it's just like, ooh.
So you get no joy, though. Virginia shut down the Orange Bowl in a way that was profoundly sad. It was like 47-0 they came in here. A team that hadn't lost a home game the entire time I was in school, Stugatz. They didn't lose a home game. Virginia came in here and closed down the Orange Bowl with something. I don't know. Was it 47 or 49-0? Something crazy.
We were at
like
a wing
that.
Joint at an event. That was sad.
Oh, my God. And then they end up wrecking the Orange Bowl. You get nothing in the way of satisfaction. You leave there not feeling like your team is any better or worse than it was 3 weeks ago. You're just sort of feeling like we're in a second tier with the Virginias of the world, well, well beneath Clemson.
Yeah, and I didn't have that. I still haven't applied the perspective of, well, that's a game we usually lose. I mean, but it's just, there wasn't even in the course of the game, the first two drives, Miami scored within their first two plays. Virginia went right back at it, and you're like, okay, this is going to be a really fun game to watch. And it was just dreadful after that. There weren't turnovers. There wasn't anything to really get me like that excited.
Boring.
The end was close, but not good, if that makes any sense.
With you not being able to drink inside at the Canes game, I'm trying to imagine how many seltzers you pounded in your car before you went. I'm thinking like in like a half hour period, like six.
Well, you certainly chugged. So I went in there with three chuggy seltzers, feeling all right. And I was caught by surprise by the lack of no booze inside because I heard that for other sections, my family shares like club seats with this other family. So I thought for the club section, there would be some alcohol sales, at least till halftime. No dice. You can't leave your seat to order food. You have to open up the Miami Dolphins app. And even the food, like, it's just basically the chicken tenders and fries that I lived off of for early 2000s Marlins teams.
So you're yawning and you have a headache halfway through the first quarter. That's how day drinking works.
Yeah, well, no, this was cracking open the Aquafina.
This was a late,
even early evening. Even if you have three going in and then you can't drink anymore, that alcohol wears off at 45 minutes and you're stuck with a headache.
I don't feel like you get the headaches. If you start drinking, I know what you're talking about. If you start drinking at noon and then you slow down and you're out in the sun.
You can't slow down.
Then 4 p.m. comes around.
I must admit, there was a UFC card that I watched and Chelsea had the 12:30 game, so I had a few seltzers that day. The headache did come creeping in.
Stugatz was yelling and screaming about tuning in, even though we read all the ads here. He still doesn't understand, and fighting has been around for a long time. He heard 2 p.m. time on the UFC card, and he only wanted to see Habib, and he's sitting around waiting for 2.5 hours in a way that comes in today and says he wants a refund.
Because, I do, yeah. Because, I mean, $88. I mean, Jesus Christ. You tell me something's going to start at $2. Let it start at $2. $86? I don't know what it was.
$64.
I don't know. I got surcharges and stuff. I have no idea.
Well,
I
mean, so you signed up for ESPN Plus, finally.
Perhaps I'm wrong. I'll look at the receipt. $64, $84, tomato, tomato. It doesn't matter. Start at $2. College football to watch. I mean,
The card wasn't great. The main event even wasn't great. It was exciting just because Habib is great, but the post fight, I totally turned on Habib. I didn't like him. I thought, man, this person is an insane person going to the crowd. This person is genuinely dangerous. You have more context, which he was deeply offended by what Conor McGregor did.
Yes, on behalf of his people.
Yeah, he was deeply offended. But how can you not connect with this man who's fighting his first and only fight? That's his last fight, he says. And I tend to believe him. I never believe the fighters when
he
says
I never believe the fighters either, but I tend to believe him too when he says this is his last fight.
Mike, I was telling Dan I wanted to watch it because you guys had told me how good Khabib is. I'm starting to get into the UFC a little bit. I'm starting to like it more and more, and it seemed like a great fight. Gaethje and Khabib, you guys were telling me. It's a great matchup. Yes, it was short, but it was impressive for me to finally kind of see it, right? What you guys have seen for so long, to see that guy turned defense because he was on the defensive, right? It was a kick from Gaethje. He turned that into offense and ended the match. Well, Gaethje, that was impressive.
Gaethje's got the leg kicks, but he was on the back foot. I'll bring in Tony because Tony worked for a long time on Ariel's MMA podcast. He knows MMA better than anyone on this show. Gaethje was throwing the leg kicks, and it did kind of affect Khabib, but that didn't stop him from pushing forward. And once Khabib takes you to the ground, that's over.
Yeah, the tough thing about fighting Khabib is that his ground game is elite, right? He's an elite wrestler. He's one of the best wrestlers we've ever seen in the UFC. And when you're not ready, he will turn, like Stu said, defense into offense and get you in a triangle choke and end the match. One of the cool things to see about Khabib is his dad was his corner man, right? His dad was one of the people that really got him into fighting and really brought him to the level that he is now. And I don't care who you are, you get emotional watching somebody that is excellent, right? Perfect, 30-0, doesn't have to fight anymore. He's 29 years old or 30 years old or whatever it is. He's like, look, this was for my dad. He's no longer here because of COVID complications. And he's there on the mat, like on his knees. And you feel that, right? Like it goes back to when you guys saw Jordan on the floor after winning a title. And it's like, wow, this is what sports is. So that to me was the best part of the match. The fight wasn't even all that. It was the post-match, just seeing him take off the gloves and saying, hey, look, without my dad, I'm done.
The reason that I believe him on retirement is what you're saying right there, Tony. It's not just that these guys always need the money or, you know, lose their identity when they retire. Because the reason there are so many retirements early in that sport, Stugatz, and this doesn't happen anywhere else, really, except maybe at running back in the NFL, is because it hurts. Because training hurts, because getting up in the morning hurts, because every day going to work hurts.
Dana White revealed Khabib actually broke his foot in the training leading up to this fight. But hearing Khabib articulate how much his dad meant to him, anyone, his dad passed away from COVID, this is a guy that was wrestling bears. That's not a joke. That's not something stereotypical of a people in the middle of nowhere. He was from the middle of nowhere wrestling bears. There's video of it. He went from nowhere to the top,
right?
To say, and you could tell how much it means to him because he's been talking about his legacy and being the greatest ever, and he wants that damn respect the way that LeBron says it. He'll tell you definitively, but unlike LeBron, like I guarantee you, like he'll break your neck if you don't give it to him. So he's the greatest ever. That's it.
I mean, is he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that, you know, about 10 fighters.
No, I don't know how you beat him. Okay. You beat him, obviously, by strikes. I would have loved to have seen Tony Ferguson against Khabib in their primes, but we're not going to get that fight. And you judge him by who he fought against, and best fighter ever.
But don't you guys think he'll eventually, like most athletes, he'll need money? He'll want to do that again?
That is not the reputation that he has, and he has a ton of money. The only thing that I would imagine would bring him back is that he might feel differently, just emotionally, making decisions from a place where your father has passed from COVID, making emotional decisions. Sometimes in years, you can alter that and get a pang of some sort. But that sport really does hurt, and money doesn't seem to be the issue with him at all. That's why a lot of guys, Pacquiao's got tax problems. Like, that's why a lot of guys end up coming back. But that doesn't seem to be an issue, and the tie to his father is one. And just sort of the spiritual and religious rigidity of what this person values, or the reason that this person values this sport, this life, being able to, represent his people. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what happened with Conor McGregor. And it was sort of weird. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Tony, because I know he's not an innocent, but it was like watching a Buddhist monk enrage because he wanted to fight all of Conor McGregor's people for all of their racism because of all of the shit that they talked to sell that fight.
Yeah, and obviously, as we know, Khabib is a devout Muslim, and I think that is part of the reason why. And if you talk, like Ariel said it on the show on Friday, there is such immense pressure on Khabib to be this excellent fighter that he needs to be undefeated because he's carrying the weight of the entire Muslim population of the world, right? Like, they started the fight at 2:00 because of the population in Saudi Arabia and in all these countries that you're sitting there and saying, okay, he is probably, aside from Muhammad Salah, he's probably the biggest Muslim athlete on the planet, right? Like, he's carrying the weight of the entire world without his dad, fighting at elite levels with elite fighters. All of this stuff is finally here. And he's like, you know what? I have all the money. He lives in Dagestan. Like, can you guys even point out where Dagestan is on a map? Because I can't.
St. Pierre, the reason that he will come out of retirement, or says he will come out of retirement to fight St. Pierre, that there would be one more fight on his resume against St. Pierre, is because of that best ever status. It's the pound for pound status. So yeah.
We say this about fighters, and we tend to believe him, Dan, about his dad. But fighters, notoriously, they retire all the time. Dana White's going to offer him a payday the likes of which he never dreamed of, and he's going to have to say no to that.
But the religious stuff makes me think he might. And the way that he's guarded his money makes me think that they're...
Well, how about the competitor part, though?
No, but I understand the competitor part. When he's making it a strictly financial decision, sure. I ask you, a devout Muslim...
It seems like he would not do it.
I mean, unless a devout Muslim is going to be almost fundamentally guarded against the temptation of making anything superficial, making any decisions for just strictly the temptations. Like, I don't know. I don't know whether he's going to fight again. We will have been denied somebody. How old is he? Is he indeed, Tony, 30-0, or is he 29-0 and 30-0 would come against St. Pierre? Like that's what I understood was the St. Pierre fight would be the only way that he comes
out. He's 29-0, and by the way, he's 32 years old.
So he's not quite in his prime. And
what weight would they fight at? Aren't they different weight classes? Unless they both go to welterweight.
Ariel told us that they might negotiate some sort of catch weight. That they've made exceptions for this for Royce Gracie versus Matt Hughes. And so they might find some middle ground. I don't know if you guys saw the weigh-in with Habib, but that dude was sweating every minute of it. Had to strip down totally naked, barely made 155, landed on 155 even, and there was like some shady stuff happening with the scale.
What shady stuff was happening with the
scale?
Like,
it didn't even have time to settle. They're just like, we saw 155 on there. Get him off of it.
Yeah, that needle could bounce around. You got to let that thing settle down. For me, it settles down right at around 178. I mean, every time.
And with the Khabib weigh-in, there was two dudes holding up the towel so he could stand up there completely nude. And those dudes had no shame about just peeking. You saw their head. They were just like looking straight down. I was just like, this is interesting.
Can I ask you guys this? What is Nate Diaz doing where he says that Khabib is 29-1? What's happening there? He said that. Yeah. I'm a big MMA guy now. It's amazing.
What is happening with you? You came in today demanding...
I mean, I went to BJPenn.com.
Weird. Yeah, BJPenn is weird. It's become an aggregate site. Just his name.
Wait a minute. Stugatz was actually at BJPenn.com? And Stugatz is right about this, though. Stugatz has been talking and not knowing MMA long enough to actually say the right thing when... He says we've done this pound for pound thing with everyone, including BJ Penn, because BJ Penn hasn't fought in a couple of years and hasn't been good more than that.
It started with that old guy. I forget who it was.
Anderson Silva.
That was one of those Gracies.
One of the Gracies. Who else was it? We've had how many? There have been some best pound for pounds around here. It's been Anderson Silva. It's been George St. Pierre.
Before Silva,
Bones
I think
Jones.
The first time we started having that discussion was the lead up to the George St. Pierre BJ Penn.
It was BJ Penn we were talking about that way before we were talking about St. Pierre
then
that
it became
way.
St. Pierre.
And all Stugatz kept saying, his 10 years of analysis from Stugatz is nobody knows who's any good.
Now I got turning defense and the offense, BJPenn.com, Nate Diaz, I know who he is.
I had no idea there was a BJPenn.com.